All right, this is the Greg Kelly Podcast. I am Greg Kelly, and we are joined once again by Bill Stevenson. Bill Stevenson, great guy from Delaware, a very successful businessman. And oh, by the way, he was once married to Jill Biden, presently the First Lady of the United States. If you've been listening to this podcast or checking out my Newsmax show, you are probably familiar with this matter. Bill and Jill were happily married in the early 1970s, and Bill started helping out Joe Biden. He had a couple of, well, Bill was running a big business called the Stone Balloon in Wilmington, Delaware. And, you know, it's kind of like a major employer and the kind of guy who might be interacting with politicians. And he sought out help on some, I don't remember what it was, but it was a zoning matter or something like that. And Cale Boggs, the incumbent senator, basically told him to get lost and why don't you go try that bum Joe Biden? Well, he did, and Joe was not yet elected to the U.S. Senate. He was fighting an uphill battle to be a U.S. senator against that guy, Boggs. And, well, they kind of took a liking to each other, and Bill threw him a fundraiser, at least two, I think, and they became allies, friends. But Joe obviously noticed Jill, who was very beautiful, but we don't think anything happened until after the death of Joe's wife and tragically his daughter as well. Terrible moment in November of 1972, shortly after he was elected. Horrible episode. I wonder, though, did Joe feel entitled from that point on to do certain things that a person shouldn't do? I don't know. But he wound up having an affair with Bill's wife. Bill didn't know anything about it. And when he did find out about it, the marriage was over. Although, actually, legally, it wasn't. And that's what we're going to talk about today. There was a lawsuit. You know, before one gets divorced, there's often a court proceeding. And Jill sued for a number of things. And, well, we get into all of that. And it's a fascinating story. And it really sets up that divorce suit back in 1976 in some ways continues to impact Bill Stevenson. It looks like they lost the lawsuit, the Bidens did, and it looks like they've been out for revenge on this poor guy ever since. We'll get into it in just a few moments, but thank you again for checking out this podcast. It's exciting, and I know you're hopefully checking out the Newsmax show as well. We're doing some amazing things. That show is special. If you've seen it, you know what I'm talking about. And I'm very proud of it. In the meantime, folks, let's talk about coffee. I wake up every morning knowing that I'm doing something great for our country of ours, actually, by drinking D'Espresso Liber coffee. They've got a really special motto. It's called Freedom Doesn't Brew Itself. And it was founded, the company, by a Green Beret almost a decade ago. He developed a dedication to crafting outstanding brews after multiple deployments. And D'Espresso Liber coffee is 100% Arabica coffee, sourced from the finest coffee farms from around the world. It is fresh roasted in-house once they receive your order. The D'Espresso Liber experience is really an awesome one. The aroma, the stuff, it's just so, gosh, you could eat it. I'm not a coffee expert, but I can tell you that D'Espresso Liber coffee is very, very tasty, out of this world tasty. It's kind of this full-bodied feel, and it's very smooth. It gives me a delicious jumpstart to my day. It is rich in flavor and American values. D'Espresso Liber coffee encourages all of us to sit down together and unite with fellow patriots to celebrate our God-given rights. So you really should check these folks out. It is fantastic, and they're great people, and it's a great business. You will be supporting America's Special Operations Community as well. So go to D'EspressoLiber.com, D'EspressoLiber.com. Now, that's spelled D-E and then espresso, E-S-P-R-E-S-S-O, L-I-B-E-R, D'Espresso Liber Coffee, D-E, espresso, D-E-E-S-P-R-E-S-S-O, L-I-B-E-R coffee.com, D'Espresso Le Bear Coffee. It's a veteran-owned, family-run small business whose brew tastes as good as it will make you feel. And after all, freedom does not brew itself. Well, we thank them very much for their sponsorship, and we thank Bill Stevenson. Our conversation begins now. Bill Stevenson, welcome back. Overall, what's the theme here? What's the theme of your life compared to what's happening right now?
Greg, I'll tell you exactly what's happening right now. What happened to me back 40 years ago by Joe Biden, he does not play fair. He plays dirty. He plays behind the scenes. What's relevant about what I have been saying to you on Newsmax and the earlier podcast comes down to one thing, Greg. He did this to me 40 years ago after a wicked divorce trial, and now he's doing it to President Trump, literally right in front of me. That's why I can't stand back and take it. I have to speak up.
I love it. And by the way, your testimony, your story, and there is evidence out there to back it up, but, you know, like, can we tie the FBI going after you to Joe Biden? Like, can we find some document? Probably not. I would almost imagine definitely not. But, you know, it's like trying to prove something that happened in a high school. Like this, if I were sitting in a high school and I know a teacher, say, was either really great or out to get me or whatever, I could, I might not be able to prove that, you know, but I was in a room and I lived that life, and somebody could come around to today and say, well, there's no evidence. There's no evidence of this. There's no evidence of any of this. Well, there's you, number one, and people can evaluate your credibility on their own, but you're the big part of the story. Do you know what I mean? Because there are, sooner or later, and it probably already has happened, when you talk to some of these reporters who call you, they want documentation, they want backup. And this is one of those moments where it's like, well, you have me, you know, you have you. Chauncey Gardner, in being there, said, well, you have me, I'm proof. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. And I'll tell you something else here. My interview with the FBI agent when they came after me for an $8,000 car loan after I had just paid off millions, my interview with the FBI agent typed out is a page and a quarter. I have that signed by him. What is really surprising is that my divorce trial from Jill is 160 pages, and it's redacted. 85% of it is redacted, especially her testimony. There's evidence out there that Joe Biden didn't play fair with me, that he wanted to get even with me, and that he wanted to destroy me. And if you look at the facts and you look what's happened to me since then, yes, it all has worked out. But those headwinds back there, Greg, were so close to sinking me and destroying my life. I just fought back, and here I am today, getting to tell my story.
And thank you for telling us.
Thank you.
So, and by the way, as I just pointed out, well, there may not be any documentation tying this. There is, and I've seen it, this FBI agent. And you know what I should do is show it to another FBI agent today, or a FBI historian, and ask them, is this the kind of thing the FBI actually pursued in the mid 1980s? I wonder what their reaction would be, because it seems just so incredibly insignificant for the Federal Bureau of Investigation to be involved in something like that. So we'll come back to that. When you were going through the divorce trial, had you already been you were separated from Jill, but I guess you were still technically married, right? That's what happens. You go through the trial before you actually get a divorce, right?
That's correct.
And she was definitely with Joe all that time, right?
That is correct. Matter of fact, here's what happened. I worked out a deal with her father to be gentle with her, because I've said to you, I've said to everybody, I cared about her. What happened. I was over it shortly. Her father was taking it worse than we were taking, as far as I was taking it. Her father was a great man. He hooked her up with a law firm called Skadden Arps. Everybody knows who they are. They're one of the biggest law firms in the United States. they worked out a deal with my lawyer that I felt was really unfair to me. But after I listened to everybody, I agreed to it. I was on my way to the law firm to sign an agreement that would have made Jill a millionaire at 23 years old after 5 years of marriage. Guess what happened? I got a call. They've said, don't come. It was relayed to me. I turned around. I got back to my office. I called my lawyer. I said, what happened? He said, they just canceled the deal. Jill is now represented by Joe Biden's former law firm. I couldn't believe it. That gentleman's name is Melvin Monzak. He's still around here in Delaware. And then about 4 months later, I went through one of the most bitter trials, as they say in Delaware, in my divorce case. 3 days of open court where I believe she was coached to destroy me. He fights dirty, Greg.
He fights dirty. A real quick aside, Melvin Monzak, yeah, he's still practicing in Wilmington. And you said, I think, to me once, he's not a bad guy. He's not the bad guy in this. He was just a lawyer.
No, he wasn't the bad guy. He was, you know, Joe's law partner. And I have nothing against him, too. Matter of fact, he lost the case. He made some big mistakes. And other than that, he's a great guy. We're actually friends.
So, all right. So the trial gets underway. And I understand the big issue is what happens to the house and what are the big things that are up for grabs in this divorce?
What was up for grabs were two things. One, they wanted $1.5 million settlement or half of the stone balloon. It had been appraised at approximately $3+ million at that point. But what they really wanted and what they tried to prove, and I believe they really didn't care whether they got this or not, but I was making $150,000 a year and they wanted half of that salary, which, you know, in Delaware does happen. That would have been $75,000 a year for Jill forever. And I wasn't totally against that. The problem was, for some reason, she starts this testimony that I'm skimming another couple $100,000 a year off the stone balloon in cash. And they want half of that. That's where it got nasty. That's where it got crazy. That is the first time I've ever seen the Department of Justice and the Treasury Department sitting behind me in my divorce trial on the second day.
They were there. How do you know that it was them? How do you know DOJ and Treasury, federal, were there?
Well, first of all, it's a small town. And second of all, I knew who everybody was. And third of all, I was talking to them in between the breaks. I mean, I knew these people. You know, I'd been successful in business for 10 years. Everybody knew they were there.
And they were
my lawyer is the one that pointed them out to me. But I knew them. I knew who they were. I knew the players were.
And they're there because what? They suspect or they've been told that, oh, maybe a crime happened here?
I believe that that was the power of Joe Biden to get them there. I believe his office said, hey, you can't even imagine what happened to this young lady named Jill Stevenson. She's over testifying that Bill's stealing $200,000 a year without paying taxes on it. Up until that point, I had a wonderful relationship with the IRS, the Department of Justice, everybody. I mean, it was just a big party down here. And next thing you know, I'm the villain.
So without going into all, and I mean, as much detail as you like, but it's a difficult trial. And how does it all end up?
It ended up shocking. I was sitting there and the judge at this point, and I'm talking general figures here, gave her over $1 million. And at this point I had given her her Corvette. I had arranged for her to get a townhouse about 10 miles away from the stone balloon. I was paying her $2,000 a month. I gave her all her clothes, all our furniture to furnish her townhouse. Anyway, the judge offers her over $1 million in the settlement. I sink down in my chair and I go, what am I going to do? I looked at my lawyer. He didn't say anything. The courtroom, you could have heard a pin drop. And then the judge goes through what his findings were. He starts adding up things. He said, you know, well, you gave her a car, you arranged for a townhouse, you've given her money. I'm going to rule that her education going on to her, at that point, she wasn't a doctor. She was heading toward her master's. I'm going to rule her education is worth $1 million. And he's up there literally adding everything together right at his desk. I'm staring at him. And he says, it looks like Jill owes you about $40,000. Greg, I could have fainted. I almost did.
That's incredible. So what was the judge's name?
I believe it was Judge Ridgely. To tell you the truth, that's a great question. But Judge Ridgely, I believe, was the judge at that time. And because there were so many different court hearings and everything else before this, but that was it.
So he figures
the way my lawyer stood up and said, we don't want any money, Your Honor. And that was it.
So you embarrassed Joe Biden. You embarrassed Jill. You embarrassed. Wow. Do you think that's what
you
humiliated them, perhaps?
Let me tell you. Joe Biden's law partner stood up and yelled, well, what about the house, Your Honor? What about the house they own together? And the judge looks back at him and he says, oh, yeah, Bill keeps the house, too, because he, you know, he bought it. She never worked. She's been going to school. Let the house is Bill's. And I think that's what led to all the future problems. And that's, I believe, what upset Joe Biden so badly that he just wanted to get even with me and destroy me. That's what I'm talking about. He started fighting dirty because it has continued right up until 2012, Greg.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. By the way, this trial, this ruling from the judge, this is in what, 1976, 1977? When was this?
1976.
And she gets married. Let me think here. Let me see here. I think
in 1977.
Yeah, June of 1977. Wow. So when you leave the courtroom, do you feel victorious or do you feel confused? Do you feel, what do you feel?
I almost think that it was like I was an out of body experience. I'm walking down the hall thinking I was going to have to come up with like another $1 million. And I'm walking down the hall, a free man. I don't even remember. It seemed like the hallway was about 1,000 yards when in fact it was probably only 100 feet to get outside. I took a breath of fresh air. I looked at my lawyer. I hugged him. I got into my car and I drove away and I thought I was never looking back and it was over. And then it just got worse.
And again, if they had gone with the deal that had been arranged that you were on your way to sign, they would have gotten $1 million income, all this
over,
stuff.
Over a period of time, she would have had more than $1 million, Greg.
Wow. All right.
It's crazy.
When do you start?
And then go ahead. Everything started to come down.
When do you realize, they're after me now?
Frankie Biden comes up to me at a football game at the in the end zone at the University of Delaware.
When?
Probably early, like late 1981, or it might have been during the playoffs, early 1982. And he looks at me, and they had appealed the ruling over the house. They fought for the house. It took until like 1982 for her to have to go into her law firm and sign to give me the house. She signed off the house reluctantly. She was upset. But you're talking now, you know, she's been married for 5+ years to Senator Joe Biden. And next thing you know, she's given this house back officially. And Frankie Biden came up to me and he said, nothing but bad is going to happen to you going forward. Nothing but bad. You broke her heart and Joe's going to get even. And I looked at Frankie and I said, are you threatening me? You got to be kidding me. And anyway, to make a long story short, within a couple months, my brother and I were indicted for being late 8 days on a tax deposit for withholding taxes. We were 8 days late, Greg. We talked about that a little bit on Newsmax, but this was just the start of what happened.
That is amazing. I know we went through it. The payroll taxes for the first quarter of 1982, about $8,000 for the Stone Balloon. First quarter, that's January, February, March. You're in federal court, I believe, April 19th for non-payment of federal taxes. That were the deadline was 19 days earlier. Federal court. It is insane. You ultimately, I believe your brother is the one who pleaded guilty to two misdemeanors, which may have been wrongly reported as a felony. He was the one who's really was kind of in charge of the books. You had ultimate responsibility, but he was the one writing the checks. And obviously just totally blown out of proportion. So that was the first crisis Biden engineered, we believe, correct?
I believe, absolutely. And there is just a lot of proof out there. Now, you have to remember, Greg, going forward, there is a gentleman who to this day still wants to come out and tell people his side of the story. And we're trying to avoid that, but that's up to him where he goes with that now. I've advised him not to tell the story, but he worked for the Biden administration for 30 years, and he's willing to say, and I don't want to get him in trouble or you in trouble or me in trouble, because he hasn't said it publicly yet. He has said it to some people behind the scenes, I believe, that, you know, that this was all orchestrated. How that goes, Greg, I have no idea.
You mean this is all orchestrated by Biden, your trouble?
By the Biden administration, just to get even with me,
well,
yes.
The Biden staff, you mean the Biden, yes. Senatorial office, right?
Exactly, the Biden senatorial office. This was way back.
Okay, and he knows that, and well, I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, it'd be pretty wild if we get him to say that or if he wants to say that, but that's for another day. So you get through the payroll crisis. Well, you don't really get through it. I mean, gosh, you're dragged into federal court. Your brother actually gets convicted. How long did that take to get adjudicated from, like, when was that finalized, do you know?
Within 8 weeks. And another rushed case.
I'm going to point out that you got the Stone Balloon. It's still thriving. And doesn't one of the Bidens, maybe it's Jim Biden, I'm not sure, start a rival business, a nightclub right down the block or nearby?
Not down the block, a couple miles away. But Jim Biden goes into the bar business, but that was way back. He was already out of it, and the bar had failed. That was back in 1974 to 75. Jim Biden, and that's when the corruption in the Biden family that's well known started. Jim Biden opened up a bar in a shopping center, Greg. They didn't own the land. It was very similar to the Stone Balloon.
I'm sorry, wait a second. Is this 1974 or is this in the 80s? When is this?
No, this is 1973, 74. It goes way back.
Okay.
But it comes forward here a little bit. And anyway, they open up a bar to compete against me. They were given $1.8 million from the First Pennsylvania Bank, and they were given $560,000 from the First Pennsylvania Bank. And to say that they never paid it back, they literally sold the bar. Right after they sold the bar filed for bankruptcy, and that money was never paid back. And that probably was still being litigated right now in 82 to 83. It took years for them to get out of that. Never made the papers, you know, like a lot of cover-up back then, which is what's going on right now, a lot of cover-up with what's going on behind the scenes.
Well, right? Some of it did make the papers, actually. I mean,
you actually have articles.
Well, here's a Evening Journal, Wilmington, June 5th, 1978. The nightclub manager, the headline is Disco Manager Says Philadelphia Bank Made Him Patsy. The nightclub manager who took over operation of the Seasons Change Disco from James B. Biden has charged that a Philadelphia bank used him as the patsy when Biden defaulted on its $500,000 loan. The charge was reported today by the Philadelphia Daily News in a story detailing how young Biden, who had a net worth of only $10,000, obtained the $500,000 loan from First Pennsylvania Bank while his older brother, Senator Joseph R. Biden, was sitting on the Senate Banking Committee. The Daily News also said two lawsuits have been filed as a result of the loan. The Evening Journal first reported the loan and loans from the troubled Farmers Bank of the state of Delaware in 1977. Let me go on here just for a little bit longer. The bank did not want the senator's brother on the paper when the disco folded. Salvador Cardile, the man who took over Seasons Change from young Biden, told Daily News reporter Jim Nicholson, "They needed a patsy, me." The Evening Journal found no evidence that the senator, who gave up his seat on the banking committee last year, used his position to help his brother get the loan. The Daily News found the same thing. After James Biden had defaulted on the first Pennsylvania loan, the bank arranged to turn over operations of the suburban night spot to Cardile, 43, of Yerdon, Pennsylvania, in the spring of 1977. He closed the place last January. All right. After Biden turned over the disco to Cardile, the bank tried to collect the debts from Biden 2 weeks ago. The Daily News reported First Pennsylvania filed suit against Cardile. The bank was responding. And there's another article here. I may get to it before we're done, where they have Joe Biden complaining to the bank. They say that Joe Biden didn't have anything to do with the loan, but he complained to the bank that they gave him the loan in the first place or something like that. But Joe Biden did speak about this at the time. I'll find it.
But here, that's what I'm saying. It goes right up because the bank then came to me, not even knowing the history, that my ex-wife is Mrs. Biden at that time. And they came to me and they said, "We have a sweetheart deal for you. We are going to let you take over this business. You'll have two bars. You'll control the Philadelphia market north of Delaware, and you'll control the Delaware market in the south. Can you do this?" I thought that was one of the funniest meetings I've ever went to. I said, "Well, you're going to give me, you know, all that money, a big loan. And Greg, I will take a lie detector test. I will swear to God." They said, "No, you're not going to get additional money to run this business because your brother's not on the Senate Banking Committee." I just looked at him and laughed. Back then it was funny, and it still is. It actually makes me laugh now when I look back at how intertwined the Biden family and I have been. But as I said, even after all that, it still gets worse with me.
So, what, by the way, did they start that business because you were successful at it? I mean, you were the pioneer of this kind of big nightclub music venue, you know, big bands coming from all over the world. They wanted to emulate, they wanted to basically steal your thunder, right?
I don't know whether it was that as much as they thought they could do better than I did. You have to remember this, all this plan with this bar, they came to me and they said, "Look, we're doing this." And I said, "That's a bad location. You know, I have the college. I have, you know, 20,000 students here. You have nobody up there on the Pennsylvania line. You know, you're even 10 miles from Westchester University." I said, "Don't ask me for help for what you guys should do, because you will be competition. You will filter off 10 to 15% of my crowd. I have a lot of people that come down from North Wilmington. If they can go see you, why would they come see me?" So it was friendly, and that was probably before, believe it or not, Joe and Jill, that I believe maybe it was 10 months before they got together. I mean, it was so interwoven back then, it was just bizarre, is the best way to put it.
All right.
They came to me, and then the banks came to me 7 years later to try and, you know, get the place open. It was still sitting there, and they wanted to get paid.
So that matter with James Biden has nothing to do with the car loan and stuff like that, right?
Nothing.
Okay, good. So you are running the Stone Balloon. Everything's fine, but you're going to make some changes. Tell us about that and how the car enters into all of it.
Basically, what happened here was I was going to make some changes. I realized that I'm working very hard. There was something that happened right during this period of time, which had nothing to do, I believe, with Joe Biden or anybody. But roadblocks, which are now well known, the first place in the country that roadblocks took place was Newark, Delaware. When they decided that they were going to stop cars and check people whether they were drunk or not, started in Newark, Delaware in the fall of 1982. It hurt business. I had a valuable piece of land. I had a valuable business. I decided that I was going to get out of the stone balloon business, keep the land, and sell the business. I had people begging me to buy this place, people with big money, people that really didn't have to make money. They just wanted to own the stone balloon, and I decided to do that. That maybe is when Joe Biden and everybody that wanted to see me go down once and for all decided to make their move. What I did was I brought three friends in, not my lifelong, very trusted friends, three very well Delawareans. And one had inherited two big restaurants. The other one had inherited a golf course. And the other one, they owned the Mercedes-Benz dealership in town. They were all friends. Then I hear about this meeting right when I'm talking to them about selling the business to them and keeping the land, which at that time had just been appraised for about $1.1 million. I hear from a great friend that there's a golf meeting. Those three plus my loyal friend.
There's a golf meeting? What do you mean? At a golf course?
Yeah. What they decided to do was take an invitation from Joe Biden to play a game of golf.
The three of those guys.
The three of those guys plus my loyal friend, and I'll explain him in a second, and Joe Biden went out to play golf. At this golf game, my friend, who is one of the most successful developers in Delaware, leaves the golf course, comes directly to my office, walks upstairs, and says, "You're in serious trouble. These guys are not your best friends. They're not loyal to you. They are going to set you up, and they're going to buy the place cheaper. They're going to buy everything." And I said, "You know what?" I said, "This is just sort of funny." In the next 3 or 4 weeks, I found out that one of them was now a paid FBI informant. Wealthy, well-known, was an FBI informant. That is documented. Everybody around knows that is true. There have been newspaper articles on that.
Let me ask you something, though. Once this guy gives you this piece of information, couldn't you have just walked away, or did you already have a deal with them, or had you already sold it to them?
The deal was literally made.
The deal was,
I had not, it was official.
It was official.
It was official.
You had already made a deal with them. Okay.
Okay. It was official. The deal was done. What happened was, the deal's done. I'm supposed to get a paycheck. I'm supposed to get a BMW, which I did, a 1983 BMW. I'm supposed to get two more bars. We were going to open up in Dewey Beach, and we were going to open up at a location in Pennsylvania up by Harrisburg. That whole deal in 6 months was off the table. These guys just made one decision after another to screw the place up. I decided that I was going to take this BMW and go my own way. I was already doing out-of-state concerts. Greg, I would work like a dog for a month at the Stone Balloon.
Let me make sure I understand, though. So they have a deal. They're going to buy the place, but it's like when a new manager or whatever buys a company and they let the guy who built it keep running it, right? You were going to run it?
That's exactly right.
Okay.
That is exactly right.
And
you know, that's the way it was going to work. I trusted them. And then I realized that everything is that somehow these guys were
working for Joe.
They weren't on my side.
They weren't on your side. And do you, and you had a, in the contract, you had a contract with these guys, and in the contract, there was a provision for a company car?
Yes.
Oh, that's where the BMW comes in?
That's correct.
Okay. And then you,
yeah, I'm sorry. I sort of like it's a lot going on right now.
Yeah, no, it's fine. But I'm correct in that, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, this is the car that caused the loan.
One more thing. Did you, once that guy told you that information, is that something you remember immediately acting on? Did you do something as a result of that meeting?
I knew that something was going down, and I knew that what they were doing was not in my best interest or anybody's best interest. The bar went from making about $500,000 every year. They cut it in half by cutting the vans, by cutting everything. The place was losing money. It was nuts, and I wanted out. So I went to the bank, put the car in my name, and got an $8,000 loan on it.
All right. Before that, the place starts going downhill. You're running it, but you have these partners now, so they have a lot of say, right?
They had all the say at this point. They weren't even listening to me.
And was it getting contentious? I mean, did you see the bad decisions they were making? Were you arguing with it, or did they just kind of push you aside? How did that?
I knew that something was going on, and they were up. They were out to just get rid of me, and I did not have any idea what was right around the corner.
Okay, and
because they turned around and they said, "There's $8,000 owed on the car," and why I went into the bank and got $8,000, it was just to prove a point, I guess. I walked in to get the title and pay for the car, and they told me, well, it's only $8,000. If you want to just put it on a loan, then that way, you know, you can pay us back when, you know, you pull your money together. So I signed a loan document for $8,000, and I said I was president of the Stone Balloon. Greg, I did that.
Yeah. Wait.
The fact is,
nobody
in the world has ever been indicted for an $8,000 car loan in federal court.
I want to just understand.
That had to take some power.
All right, Bill, I have to understand, though. I'm sorry. The car, it was a company car under the contract, right? That means
correct.
The Stone Balloon owns it. You get to use it, right?
That's correct.
And you tell them, I'm out of here. All I want is the car, right? Is that what you tell them?
That's correct.
You tell them you want the car.
I wanted the car because in the contract it said I was getting a car. I had no idea that they had leased the car and let me use it. And they kept saying, well, when you leave, we'll pay it off and we'll give you the car.
Okay.
But
so
that
you
was even changed.
You thought, okay, you didn't know it was leased, but it was leased?
Yeah.
All right. So you go to the, and you go to the BMW, the bank or the BMW dealership. Who do you think you want to, who owns the car? You want to go pay the owner of the car.
An out-of-state bank had the lease. And I went to them and they said, there's no lien on it. And, you know, if you're Bill Stevenson, you can take the car.
Okay. And then, but
where I made the mistake was to try and do the right thing and, you know, just pay the $8,000 difference. I was ready to call it a day. Greg, I was still successful then. Everything was going wrong. It was just horrible timing.
You said you went into the bank and you said, I'm Bill Stevenson, president of the Stone Balloon. And then you said something else and you said, and I did that. That's on me. It sounded like you were taking the blame for something that you did that was wrong. And that's fine.
Oh, yeah, I did.
Well, but I know, but what was wrong about that? You got to explain it to me. What was wrong about what you did? What did you do that was wrong?
What I did was I did not have permission to take the car. Do you understand what I mean? Like the car was, they owned the business at this point. You know, I was under contract. They didn't care about the contract. And I basically went in and borrowed $8,000 from another bank. And that was that. I mean, I did. I've always said that to you and I've always said it to everybody. I'm not denying I didn't do it. It was just one of the dumbest things I've ever done.
I guess I'm still...
I just thought that $8,000, I paid the $8,000 off. I figured that would be it. Next thing you know, I've got the FBI standing in my business, you know.
But forgive me. Still don't understand what was wrong that you did. The car is the property of... It's a lease car. You don't know it's a lease car, correct?
Correct.
you want to take ownership of this leased car.
That's correct. I felt that the car belonged to me. That was part of the deal. I 100% believed that regardless of what I had it to do, I wanted this BMW, and I just wanted to leave them and all this nightmare behind. At that point, I wanted out, and I wanted the car.
I get it. So what? I still don't understand how you deceived anybody. I mean, how is? Where did the?
Oh, I don't either. I don't either, because the thing is, I couldn't have been any clearer. But on a technicality, I was charged with making a false statement to a federally insured bank for $8,000.
And what was that false statement?
That I had the permission, that I actually had the right to make that statement. It was a false statement. I didn't own the stone balloon any longer.
Oh, I see. I see. You didn't. You said
it's so simple.
Right.
To me, it was like I called the bank back and I said, look, I want to pay this loan off. And I ran in and paid the loan, $8,000.
And you represented yourself as the president of the stone balloon when you no longer were? That's the crime?
Right. That's exactly it. I made a false statement to the bank that I still had the right to do this, and I didn't.
And isn't it arguable, though? I mean, under the contract, what was your title? I guess it wasn't president. What was the? Did you have a title in the contract?
Manager.
You were the manager. So you said president, and that's the problem right there.
It's just that word.
So, okay, I get it now. And what did that look like? The FBI is standing there, and what do they do?
He comes in and he sits down, and I said, he goes, I'm an FBI agent. I don't really, I can mention his name if you want me to.
Sure.
Claire Elkington. I said, Mr. Elkington, where are you from? I don't know you. And he goes, I'm from Washington, the state of Washington, Seattle, Washington. I said, what? I said, why are you even here? And he looked at me and he said, I have no idea. I just was coming to interview you. And 2 days later, he was gone. They brought an FBI agent in from Seattle, Washington, for a page and a quarter interview that you saw and I'm sitting looking at right now. That's typed. The interview took 15 minutes. 2 days later, I'm charged with making a fraudulent statement to the Wilmington Trust Company, which is now, you know, not a bank any longer. They went under. It ruined my life. Next thing you know, everybody, Greg, looks at this. And here's the tragedy of this loan. Okay? It was an $8,000 car loan. To me, I thought, okay, it's an $8,000 car loan. Here is what I lost. I owned the biggest bar in the United States. I could have opened up another successful bar right down the street from them, which I literally was going to do until I found out that I am not allowed to get a liquor license any longer because of this conviction for an $8,000 car loan. Next thing you know, I get notice that I have got to sell my 150 guns that I inherited from my father.
Because you're a felon
at this
point. A gun
collection that was in the family forever.
Because you're a felon.
Yeah.
This is a felony.
Absolutely. And then the big one. They came and they said, hand over your gun permit. I said, you've got to be kidding me. This is a financial crime. And they said, doesn't matter. So, Greg, for 40 years, I've had to live with that every morning I get up. Like this morning I got up. Guess what? I'm a convicted felon over an $8,000 car loan and no gun permit, okay, no concealed weapon permit, and I could never go back into the bar business again. How I turned this around, sometimes I even like smile at myself when I look at the mirror, but thank God I did.
What was going on, though? Okay, did you get a lawyer? Did somebody say, wait a second, I mean, this is crazy. We can fight this. We have to fight this. Right?
Yeah.
So did you get a lawyer? Did you guys try to fight it?
Oh, yeah. I got a lawyer. They never offered anything less. Like, they never ever came to me and said, okay, we're charging you with one felony here. I was never offered a plea deal. A couple of the lawyers that I had used in the past were, you know, probably not jumping right at this. I had great legal counsel. My goal, I was so upset with these three at that time that I just could not believe what was happening. I had a lawyer. I watched them testify and tell anything but the truth. Okay. You know, I had mentioned to you privately and I had mentioned to you openly, I was so upset, Greg. I really had dark thoughts of getting even with them. And I mentioned this before, and I thank God got over this. I swear, when I told them that I'm going to get even and kill you all, they all laughed right in my face and said, Bill, stop it. You'll get over this. Everything will be fine. It'll all work out. Greg, how it worked out for them and how it worked out for me, I've even mentioned before. I was upset. I was going down. They had taken some of the prized possessions in my life. And then the next day, we all go out to lunch, and sitting across the bar talking to the manager of a Winston, it was called H.A. Winston's, I see this beautiful young lady named Linda. That's what stopped everything. All these dark thoughts that I was like going crazy over. I met her, and you know, you've met her, and 6 months later we were married, and I went on with my life, and I thank God every day that Linda came along.
That's beautiful. But you said we all went out to lunch, and that's when you saw Linda. Who's in your group? Is it these guys that you're thinking about killing? No.
Two of my best friends.
Okay, good.
Two of my best friends. One of them, probably one of the most successful developers, same people that warned me, and my best friend, Louie. And we all went out to lunch, and, you know, it was like, okay, this is going to work out, because I was being sentenced. I got sentenced to probation, and I was fined $1,000 after all this, only $1,000. And Linda came along, and that was it.
And
everything got better. And I walked away from the Stone Balloon, never looked back for years. And now there is a new restaurant in the exact same location in a building on the property that I own that's worth millions. 54 condos are built there now. And there is a new restaurant named the Stone Balloon Ale House.
And this, you have no doubt that this was orchestrated by Joe Biden. And by the way, neither do I.
I married Linda, and then the Joe Biden interference continued, Greg. He destroyed a couple things going forward. One, I think I explained a little bit in the Newsmax thing. But my life was going on. A lot of people do not realize that not only do I know the bar business and the trucking business, but I feel my real expertise is I know everything about every car ever made. I'm an expert on muscle cars. I have a collection. I've owned them. And there was a big bank that in the early 90s came to town. Everybody knows who they are. They're called MBNA. They were here, and now they're gone. But this bank decided that their chairman and president of the bank, his name was Charles Crawley, he turned around and said, I'm going to buy the greatest car collection and put them not only in the branches, but we're going to name the credit cards after them. I'm going to buy a car collection. He heard about me. Linda and I met him at the Atlantic City Car Show. In like 1990, I didn't know exactly how big this guy was or how strong he was, that he was a future billionaire. But he said, I told him something about a car. He was so impressed. He said, I want you on my team to buy these cars. 6 months later, we're making plans. There is a big event down here, a big fundraiser that I've always has been one of my favorite charities. It's called Point to Point. It raises millions for charitable events. The MBNA became the big sponsor of this. In 1991, I get a little phone call that Charles Cawley wants to see me up in the big MBNA tent. I'm parked about a quarter mile away. You rent a VIP parking space.
Charles Cawley is the MBNA. He's the billionaire. He's the guy who owns the bank, right?
He wants to see me.
But he's the guy. He's the very successful man who he ran the bank.
He ran the bank. Everybody in the world knew who he was.
Yeah.
The guy was bigger than life and a great man. And he wanted me to join his team of buying these cars around the world and bringing them back to Wilmington. It would have been perfect for what I loved and what I wanted to do. The team that did this all became multi-year millionaires than you could even imagine. They're famous. The car collection was famous. So real quick, not to be too serious about this, I go over to the tent. I'm walking in. I immediately see Mr. Cawley. He big wave. Come on over, Bill. I'm walking. I get 10, maybe 20 feet away. And I see who he's talking to. And my heart drops. It's Senator Joe Biden. Joe Biden looks at me 20 feet away, stares right at me. Literally, you've seen him do this. He turns Mr. Cawley around so their backs are to me. He's talking to him and making gestures with his right hands. He's got his left arm around him. He's like not whispering, but talking right into his ear. I see Mr. Cawley look behind Joe and stare at me. It was like he was getting the worst news in the world. I felt like I should walk up and say something. He's staring at me. Joe's continuing to talk. Finally, Joe turns around and looks at me and then goes back and talks to Mr. Cawley. Mr. Cawley's talking to Joe. He turns around and looks at me and he holds his finger up like, I'll talk to you in a little while. Okay? I felt whatever is being said there is the worst thing that could ever be said to anybody. I have no idea what Joe said. That day went by. Linda and I went home. I didn't hear from Mr. Cawley. I never went back in the tent. I could not believe this was happening. 2 weeks later, Mr. Cawley's secretary calls up and said, Bill, it's just not going to work out. Greg, this is the bank that bought two of Joe Biden's homes for twice what they were worth. That's documented. My relationship with Mr. Cawley, never went a step further. I never heard from him again, other than seeing him at an event where I would just say hi.
This story that you've told went national. I mean, publications all over the place picked it up. The New York Post most prominently, but dozens of others. The story you told me on Newsmax, Jill and Joe and the persecution and prosecution of you, which seems to be pure harassment and vindictiveness. It's run everywhere except in your hometown paper. Is that right?
That's correct.
What does that mean about Delaware? What does that mean about, I mean, like, what does that show in your opinion?
A funny thing just happened. Last year, I won from the Delaware Small Business Chamber of Commerce. I won the Lifetime Achievement Award as a small business owner for my two businesses, the delivery business and the Stone Balloon success, and the fact that the Stone Balloon reopened as a museum to me on Main Street in Newark. They gave me this award. It was never mentioned in the News Journal. It was never mentioned in Delaware Today Magazine. It was never mentioned by anybody that I believe is afraid of the Bidens, that they do not want to see me get any good stories. This has been the way it has been around here. Do you know they just finally, for the first time ever, carried a story about the Hunter Biden investigation?
Really?
They're yes. Just... This is the News Journal that used to employ 350, 400 people about a quarter of a mile from me. There's now 50 people at the paper. And the paper has, there's no stories about anything that has been negative to the Bidens. And it's been that way for the last 15 years. It's tough living here, Greg.
But you have a lot of support in the community, right?
Oh, God, yes. I mean, like, I don't think I have a lot of support. I think I'm truly loved for everything I've accomplished and everything I've done for people around me. And a lot of people know that. The tide has turned. I walk into a restaurant. People come up to me and they said, "We heard you on Newsmax. Bill, we've actually, you know, we love this Greg podcast. Or when are you going to finish it up?" I mean, I'm hearing people are following what I'm saying, Greg. Do you know he only got 50% of the vote, 55% of the vote in Delaware? There's just so many like little stories that have never come out in any paper, but are like, I hear them, people talk about them, and I feel badly for them, the way that they have misrepresented themselves for the state of Delaware. I feel badly for all the people in Delaware that say Joe Biden's from Delaware. It's an embarrassment. What he did to me and what he has done for me, against me in the last 40 years, Greg, it's happening right now. It's happening to former President Trump. It's happening to the Trump family. 91 indictments? This is nuts. They are using the court in the exact same way that they tried to destroy me, and I pray every day if they don't destroy Donald Trump. We need a change at the top. I've said the tide is changing. I feel it around here. I really feel like I'm loved in Delaware. I think people respect me. And he has no respect from, I think at this point, more than 60 to 70% of the people in Delaware. He's lost all credibility here, Greg. You know, it's tragic.
I understand. You know, it's interesting. I just noticed this over the weekend. He's been doing it for a long time, but he gets up there in most speeches, just talks about how much money, you know, they're spending on this program or that program, right? We got billions for this. We got 1.7 billion for that. He's bragging about that. And that's what like small time politicians do. I mean, that's what congressmen and senators are supposed to do. Bring home the bacon to the state, you know? And that's kind of all he knows, you know, bringing home, bragging about stuff that he did to constituents, bringing home money. And he hasn't upped his game since 1973, as far as I can tell. And it just kind of, I know it's maybe it's a superficial thing, maybe it's not, but I think it's, if he hasn't changed that, he also is not, his operating systems haven't changed either. And going after Trump reflects how he went after you. And because nothing else has really changed in this guy. He's still a venal, in my opinion, depraved man. And you can see that throughout his career. Anybody who gets up there and lies with that kind of aggressiveness and kind of carefree attitude, he's been caught lying in 1987. It's most amazing footage. This is who he is, hasn't changed. And the fact that these small-time tactics going after somebody in his own turf. Anyway, I get it. I get it now.
1973 till now, he hasn't changed a bit. I honestly think sometimes when he's up there making these speeches about the money, that he thinks it's his money to give away.
Right.
Right. I think he's lost all reality. I mean, it's just not something that I'm seeing and that people are talking to me about. I think the whole world has seen it. And it's because of the way he's acted from 1973. He's been compromised. I think it's going to be proven. And it's dangerous. It's dangerous. And if I can have anything to do by explaining my story, that what has happened to me over 40 years, that this is like a rerun right in front of me. This is movie two, except it's happening to the Trump family, and it is dangerous.
Many thanks indeed to Bill and Linda. What a story there, huh? And we have more to talk about, Bill and I, and we're so glad that he has put his trust in this podcast and in the Newsmax program. Just a spectacular human being. We got to talk about sometime the issue with his heart. One day he had a heart attack in New York City. And what happened next is a miracle. Really is amazing. We'll talk about that soon. But hey, folks, do yourself a favor and check out D'Espresso Le Bear Coffee. Remember, it's a company started by a Green Beret about 10 years ago. And this guy, these people, they're totally dedicated to crafting the best coffee in the world. I'm not exactly an expert, but this is the best coffee I have ever had. It's smooth. It's full-bodied. It is amazing. So D'Espresso Le Bear, it is important, these smaller businesses, to support them. You know, these corporations and their billions and trillions of dollars. What? Come on. This is so in keeping. I love the simplicity of it as well. D'EspressoLeBear.com. D'EspressoLeBear.com. D'Espresso Le Bear. D-E, and then the word espresso, E-S-P-R-E-S-S-O, and then Le Bear, L-I-B-E-R, like the first four letters in the word liberty. D'EspressoLeBear.com. Freedom does not brew itself. We'll talk again soon. Many thanks.